Good morning and thank you for waiting. Welcome to the conference call to discuss Banco Santander Brazil S.A.'s results. Present here are Mr. Ángel Santo Domingo, Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. André Parize, Head of Investor Relations. All the participants will be on listen-only mode during the presentation, after which we will begin the question-and-answer session when further instructions will be provided. If you need any assistance during the presentation, please call the operator by pressing star zero. The live webcast of this call is available at Banco Santander's Investor Relations website at www.santander.com.br/IR, where the presentation is also available for download. We would like to inform that questions received via webcast will have answering priority. If you wish to ask a question via phone, please press star one. Once your query is answered, please press star two to leave the line. Each participant is entitled to ask one question. If any further information is required, please re-enter the line. Before proceeding, we wish to clarify that forward-looking statements may be made during the conference call relating to the business outlook of Banco Santander Brazil, operating and financial projections and targets based on the beliefs and assumptions of the Executive Board, as well as on information currently available. Such forward-looking statements are not a guarantee of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions, as they refer to future events and hence depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. Investors must be aware that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operational factors may affect the future performance of Banco Santander Brazil and may cause actual results to substantially differ from those in the forward-looking statements. I will now pass the word to Mr. André Parize. Please, Mr. Parize, you may proceed.
Good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to welcome you to Santander Brazil's earnings conference call. We had another solid quarter, which will be presented by our CFO, Mr. Ángel Santo Domingo. Before moving on to the quarter's highlights, I'd like to remind you that Santander Brazil will host our first Investor Day on October 8th, when we celebrate 10 years as a listed company. It'll be a great opportunity to discuss with the top management about the strategy, threats, and opportunities. We will provide further information in the coming month. Now, I turn it over to Mr. Ángel Santo Domingo.
Hello, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure being with all you this morning again. Today's agenda, as you may see, I will start with key messages, with a look at the Santander Group's results, which were presented this morning. Next, I'm going to provide a quick overview on the macro outlook of Brazil, which will be followed by our quarter results. And to wrap it all up, I will finish with the presentation with some concluding remarks on the main topics that we will be discussing today. So going to the next slide, first main idea is that our profitability remains solid. In first Q19, we delivered a 21.1% return on equity, maintaining the same high level as last quarter and being the highest level for a first Q since our IPO 10 years ago. In the following slides, I will elaborate on the reasons that sustain this positive performance. But in a nutshell, I would say that P&L operational leverage, coupled with tightly controlled provision expenses, was key to our success this quarter. We have achieved top of class in both efficiency and recurrence ratios, as you may see in the slide. I would also like to draw your attention to the fact that we distributed $1 billion in dividends, in fact, interest on capital, in the first Q of this year, which compares to $60 million in first Q18 and close to $500 million in first Q17. On slide six, we show that our good performance is a response to our efforts to continually improve the experience of our customers and the engagement level of our employees. As I have mentioned in past quarters, customer satisfaction is a cornerstone of our strategy to keep growing in a consistent, sustainable, and profitable manner. We keep track of our progress in this field through the NPS, the Net Promoter Score that you already know, which increased by 10 points compared to first Q18 and a couple of points versus last quarter, reaching 59 points. As we arrive to these high NPS levels, it is obviously more difficult to keep on showing strong improvements. In any case, we are absolutely convinced that that the positive evolution in this indicator is one of the main pillars that have helped and is helping to drive the expansion of our customer base. I should also note that in our view, we continued dedication, engagement, and commitment of Santander's employees. The continued dedication, engagement, and commitment of Santander employees have been instrumental to the sustainability of our business. Next slide shows that we remain focused on gaining profitable market share in both assets and liabilities. Let me go through the different products. Vehicles. Our digital platform, combined with our risk-based pricing, remains the backbone of our success. We have been developing solutions to strengthen our leadership, such as the latest new website platform within WebMotors. We engage and empower customers and dealers with a multidisciplinary platform that gathers solutions to enhance the entire car buying and selling journey. Cards, our offer of differentiated products for each niche, and the best credit card app in the industry, Santander Way, helped us deliver another solid quarterly performance. Payroll loans. We reach a market share slightly higher than 10%, quite a positive evolution when compared with close to 0%, I repeat, in 2014. Our digital platform has definitively contributed to this achievement, along with our strategy of increasing the number of companies and municipalities that we process payrolls for. Getnet, even considering an intense change in the competitive environment, we keep gaining and leading market share at a profitable level. Here, it is important to understand the full spectrum of the bank-customer relationship. We consider Getnet a crucial component of our plan to leverage the bank's revenues. And last but not least, agribusiness, that our expansion process continues on track as part of our plan to expand into Brazil's inner side. On slide 8, we underline the foundations why Santander continues to be a growth story. We have one external variable, the macro environment, that obviously will help structurally our evolution. On top of that, we have four forces within our structure that should keep on fueling our growth. Efficiency, cross-selling, expansion of our ecosystem, and new businesses within it. In line with this, we made two important launches in first Q. P, our open investment platform, and BEN, an employees benefit solution company currently offering meal and food vouchers. These products offer customers attractive conditions, and we are confident that they will achieve outstanding results in the coming quarters and years. We are also about to begin our operations at Santander Auto, our joint venture with the insurance company HDI, to provide auto insurance. On the next slide, you may see part of Santander's ecosystem devoted to innovations. It shows three different examples of products that we offer: SuperGet, SuperDigital, and Prospera. These are great services on a stand-alone basis, as you may see by the numbers we saw, with good growth realities that, when combined, they end up as a strong offer. As an example, we can see the platform that we have built to support Natura's sales representatives. With our POS, they no longer need to handle cash, and with access to microcredit, Prospera, they can leverage sales, all connected to a digital account with a super digital card. We are turning their life much simpler and secure with an integrated solution. Same thing, for example, happens with our recent offer of our mini POS. Moving to Santander Group results that were presented today, and I'm not going to elaborate too much on that. The net profit for the first Q reached 790 million euros. This quarter, Santander Brazil represented 29% of the group's earnings, showing the relevance of the Brazilian subsidiary results for the group. On the back of a well-behaved inflation, moving to the macroeconomic slide, of a well-behaved inflation dynamics in tandem with the maintenance of sound performance of the balance of payments, Brazilian economic fundamentals remain positive, although probably at lower than expected levels compared with some months ago. Economic activity has showed a slower than anticipated recovery trend, and market participants are probably looking forward to seeing concrete progress as far as the agenda of structural reforms is concerned, which has prevented confidence indicators from improving further. Moving to the next slide, we present to you our net profit evolution. In first Q, net profit reached 3.5 billion reais, increasing 22% year-on-year and 2% Q-on-Q. This performance come as a result of our well-defined strategy focused on profitability, improving customer perception of our services, and constantly increasing the base of active customers. At the same time, we keep focused on maintaining our risk models among the best in class and a relentless effort towards efficiency gains. As a matter of fact, the number of active customers grew for the 46th consecutive month, leading to a solid and sustainable revenue growth, allowing us to gain profitable market share. On slide 16, we present the main lines of our results, about which I will go into more detail later on. Considering that there is always some seasonality in this quarter, let me highlight the following figures. On the revenues front, NII remained practically flat relative to 4Q, as the increase in credit NII was partially offset by a reduction in deposits NII. Fees decreased 4% in the quarter, with the mentioned seasonality effect that is traditional in this quarter. In a year-on-year comparison, the fees grew 10%, maintaining a solid performance. And on the expenses side, after the hike I commented last quarter on provisioning expenses, it decreased 13% in the quarter, reaching a level more in line with previous quarters. General expenses growth was above inflation, driven mainly by higher administrative expenses, but it still remained below total revenues growth pace. In the quarter, it decreased 7%. I will elaborate on the main concepts in the following slides. On the next slide, we saw our NII evolution, which totaled 10.8 billion in first Q19, increasing 6% in the year. Highlights are credit NII expanded 1% in the quarter, impacted by a lower number of calendar days, while it increased 9% year-on-year, reflecting a solid loan portfolio expansion. Revenues from funding decreased 4% Q-on-Q, explained mainly by spreads and average volumes. And the others concept had a quarter in line with the last four quarters average. In slide 18, we can see that our loan portfolio increased 11% year-on-year and 2% in the quarter, reaching 311 billion. Individuals segment continued to deliver a strong performance, increasing 3% in the quarter and 20% in 12 months. Credit cards, personal, and payroll loans were the main growth drivers. Consumer finance also delivered a solid performance year on year, expanding 18%, powered by what I mentioned before, our successful digital platform and individual pricing model. The SME portfolio continued at a good pace, expanding by 9% year on year. The Q-on-Q comparison was impacted by seasonality in the quarter, as SMEs demand more credit to meet end-of-year impacts. And finally, the corporate portfolio, which is still lagging due to the capital markets activity and our profitability-oriented strategy. On slide 19, you can see how our funding has evolved. In a yearly comparison, funding evolved positively, with a highlight to the positive performances of savings and time deposits, growing 12 and 20% respectively. At the time, the only negative performance occurred in the most expensive instrument, financial bills or letras financieras, which presented a 4% contraction. On the quarter, it increased 1%, being adequate to support our loan book growth for the coming quarters. Now let's talk about commissions. In our view, fee revenue performance is highly linked with NPS. It comes as a result of adequate pricing, enhanced service quality, and greater loyalty, thus increasing transactionality. In a yearly basis, total fees increased 9.5% with a positive performance on cards, current account, and insurance. The 4% drop in the quarter is attributed in general to seasonality in different products like cards and insurance. Even considering a more aggressive competitive landscape in a few products, we remain confident that fee revenues will continue to present a good growth level this year. Here, since we offer a full range of banking products and services, we recognize that it is important to understand the full relationship with each client. Now, let's turn our attention to asset quality. Short-term NPL is stable around comfortable levels. As a matter of fact, the 1.8% in the 15 to 90 days NPL of corporate and SMEs that we present to you in this quarter is the lowest level in our history. In the individuals segment, the short-term NPL deteriorated 20 basis points due to the normal seasonality of this first Q. And NPL over 90 days remained flat at quite reasonable levels. In our view, this performance is a clear evidence that our risk models are highly trustable, giving us confidence to keep on growing our business. Coverage ratio decreased to 195%, remaining at a comfortable level and perfectly adequate to our risk exposure. Here, back book and front book dynamics explain part of this evolution. Moving to the next slide, loan loss provisions, net of recoveries, dropped 13%. This good dynamic led to a substantial improvement in our cost of credit, reaching 3%, which is the best level throughout past years. This, combined with our good loan portfolio growth and fees evolution, is an indisputable evidence that we are on the right track to keep on delivering a profitable operation. On slide 23, we analyze how expenses have evolved. Industrialization of process continues among the bank's top priorities, with focus on cost discipline and a lean mindset. Total expenses dropped by 7% in the quarter, attributed to seasonality in both personal and administrative expenses. In the year-on-year comparison, administrative expenses grew 13% on the back of a greater level of transactionality and activity of the bank, while personal expenses remained flat. The next slide brings our performance ratios into the spotlight. All in all, these metrics have shown good evolution. The efficiency ratio improved almost 20 basis points year on year, reaching 39.8% below the 40% level. The recurrence ratio totaled 88.8% in the quarter, achieving an all-time high level, a historic level in the efficiency ratio here. Both ratios are top of the class compared to what we know today as public figures published by our peers. As I mentioned before, thanks to all these advances, return on equity kept the same 21.1% level in the quarter as in 4Q, the highest level since our IPO 10 years ago. Moving to capital and liquidity, we continue to present solid numbers. Our funding stood at a comfortable level with a loan-to-deposit ratio of 92.4%. The BIS ratio, the Basilea ratio, is at 15.4%, being our core equity tier 1 at 13.2%. As I have commented earlier, we have substantially increased our distribution of dividends, interest on capital, in this quarter to 1 billion reais. It's almost double of what we were paying 2 years ago. Okay, as we wrap things up, I would like to highlight that we remain committed to keep on delivering a solid profitability in a responsible way, always considering our clients, employees, and shareholders. To conclude, I share with you the main highlights. Total revenues growing 7% year-on-year, reflecting customer and profitability focus. Risk modeling assertiveness shown by our asset quality indicators. Productivity consistently enhanced, leading to a better efficiency ratio. And lastly, a 22% net profit growth in the year, resulting in more than 21% return on equity for the first Q. In our view, these figures are indisputable evidence that we are well positioned to keep on delivering solid and sustainable results. I would like to thank you, everyone that is attending the call, and pass the word back to André Parise. André, with you.
Okay, now we are going to take the questions we received, and the first one I was split in two parts. It's from Thiago Batista from Itaú BBA. What are you expecting for SME loans until the end of this year? Do you see the price competition in the acquiring business impacting credit origination in this segment?
Thank you, Thiago. As I mentioned, on top of the seasonality effects, etc., what we saw on the quarter, on the year with SMEs is that they have been gaining momentum throughout the different last quarters in terms of volume. This probably goes with the economic activity and the need, as we will go forward, of new investment from this part of the from this segment of the business. Now, let me elaborate a little bit on spreads, and because probably we have more questions here, so I can address the spread issue. What do we and the volume issue? What do we see at the NII level? What we see is that volume keeps on coming in, specifically more on the retail side, and less as we move to large corporates and corporates. Probably because these last ones, they have alternative funding ways. But again, volume still is there. In terms of spreads, we see pressure in spreads by segment, but specifically also as we move to corporates and large corporates. And there, our policy is to keep on with the mindset focused on profitability. Specifically in SMEs, it is true that we haven't seen a strong pressure in terms of spreads. I don't see too much of a contamination coming from the acquiring market. That is probably more a discussion in terms of discount of receivables, MDR, and rental rates. But the point here probably is the capacity of each bank, and specifically of ourselves, to position the product and the service with a wide range of offering for them. I mean, SMEs at the end of the day, depending on the size, because, I mean, SME is a very kind of profound word, right? Because you are speaking from the individual company, individual person company, to companies that may have close to 200 million reais of income, of revenues. But, I mean, in general terms, they need a full range of products. It is not about funding. Funding is there, depending on the credit profile, etc., but funding is there. It is more about how do you position the bank with them, and this is where we are clearly putting the focus. We already reached, I mentioned last quarter, more than 1 million clients here, and we are trying to improve that part of the package of offers to offset potential churn and or spread pressure in the future.
Second part regards Getnet. Recently announced the T+2 for some new low-end clients. Is possible to see an upscaling to SME clients for this price scheme?
Well, what we announced and what probably triggered part of what we are seeing today in the sector is what we have been discussing that could happen in the acquiring system or in the acquiring sector for a long time now, for years, and that I have been sharing with you during the last quarters, which is more competition and more trying to be more aggressive in terms of positioning each of the different products and services. Let me share with you what we did some weeks ago is what we offered the possibility for the long tail, for the segments that are close to the mass market, closer to the mass market, a D+2 capacity with a rate of 2% both on credit and debit. It is the lowest offer today. It is profitable for us. It is clearly profitable. We have been obviously making the maths to make it profitable, and it is profitable for the client. So we saw that there was a clear opportunity there, and that is why we have gone into that. We are selling more than double what we used to sell in terms of POS, and we are clearly linking much more the clients. And what I will also like to underline here is that it is a transparent offer. What this means is that what we are offering to our clients is exactly what is being said in the offer. I saw, I think it was yesterday, by UNEX, which is the Association of Small Companies, an assessment by which how the different kind of marketing campaigns were being perceived, and the one from Santander Brazil was clearly marked as transparent for the client. So this is the offer. And what we are trying here is to position ourselves, and you will see more things coming in the next months and quarters, I'm sure about that, positioning ourselves in this part of the segment, in this part of the market, sorry, in this segment, in terms of being able to capture profitable, and I underline profitable, market share. So this is our strategy. We are not moving anymore in terms of additional offers for the time being, and we really expect to have a nice growth rate here. Last point here, so that I can address probably other questions around Getnet. Important point here is to understand, first, Getnet is part of our offer. Second, Getnet is integrated in the offer. It's not only part of the offer, it is integrated in the offer, which means that Santander clients tend to see that product as another product. So what we are trying here is to leverage the capacity of selling that product as well as we see other and sell other products. And and this is not new for you because I have said this in past quarters. It is already sometime, I have mentioned this for a long time now, it is sometime in which we have been investing in Getnet in two directions. First, diversification. You cannot count on one, two, or three single sources of revenues. This has been an investment we have been making for some time now, and I have shared this with you, as I mentioned. Second, cost, unit cost of operation. We have been investing strongly in being efficient so that today I may say that we have, I don't know if one of the lowest cost per unit in each of our transactions, which leads to the profitability I was mentioning before.
Okay, next question is from York Friedman, Citi. Cost of risk achieved the lowest level in 4 years, with NPL creation reducing 10% in Q on Q. How sustainable you think these trends are? Could we continue seeing additional improvement on cost of risk and asset quality trends, considering that retail already represents more than 60% of the loan book?
Okay, cost of risk and what is... this goes back a little bit. It goes back like 5 years already, but I think we have shown a strong capability in terms of risk models. I think this is a fact already. This is not something to come. This is not a promise or a... It's always something that is being delivered. I mean, we continue to focus on risk models, risk understanding, risk behavior, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we can today say that we have a strong risk modeling capacity. So, yes, cost of risk has gone down. And this has been at the same time that, as you mentioned in your question, George, at the same time that the mix has been moving towards more retail, which is even stronger in terms of the capacity of the cost of risk being controlled. And with an NPL formation that keeps on, depending on the quarter, at around the 1%, 1.2, 1.3, 0.9, 1.1, around 1 point something percent. So it's not about NPL formation. It's not about trying to lower the cost of risk. It's just that we have understood, or we think we are understanding, the way risk produces. Now, looking forward, obviously, if the mix continues to change, we will have some pressure there. But it has to do with mix. I don't see in each of the segments a kind of a deterioration that I would have to underline today. You have up and downs. You have different behaviors depending on the month, depending on the offers that you make, depending on the quarter, depending even in geography. I mean, you have all these kind of behaviors that are difficult to understand in a nutshell, in 2 minutes explanation or trying to answer your question. But again, NPL formation controlled, cost of risk controlled by segment, probably going forward, why not, depending on the mix. If you asked me this question 12 months ago, probably I would have said the same thing, because it is true that the mix is puts pressure here, but we have been able to couple with that. And a structural answer also to this is the country going into a lower cost of risk going forward? Well, that would clearly depend on the economic behavior, on this structural reforms agenda, if they are achieved, how they are achieved, and how they impact confidence and quality. For us, there is a clear variable that is much more, I mean, that we have to watch closely, which is confidence. In the way that confidence recovers or regains a positive trend, I would say that we will have volume expansion and good cost of credit.
Next question is from Eduardo Nishio, Brasil Plural. Thank you for your presentation. Your loan mix has changed substantially, with individuals growing 20% year on year, consumer finance 18% year on year, while corporate shrinking 4%. When do you think NIM will start to expand. This quarter, your NII growth is still running below credit growth. Can you comment on that, please?
Well, I address a little bit on the spread side. Now, what I see NIMs on the asset side with some pressure because of spreads. And at the same time, if we go into volume growth, both variables go into a direction that will put pressure on NIMs. No? So again, I don't want to repeat myself in terms of segments. I already elaborated on the different segments, how they are evolving. In terms of NIM, I see more stability or even positive evolution on the retail side, while I see the contrary as we move to large corporates. But again, all segments with a different pressure, with different behavior, but with some pressure in general terms. How do we compensate that? We will try to compensate, as I always say, with NII coming from the deposit side, from the liabilities. Still not there, but we are working on that. And obviously profitability coming from fees. So it is true that the mix, I mentioned that with quality, mix has changed. It will go back not only 1 year, as you are mentioning. I mean, it will go back 2-3 years. 60% of our balance sheet in terms of credits was retail, and today is 72. So we have had an intense or a sustainable change of mix that, as I said before, we have been able to go through with a stable cost of risk or a low cost of risk. But I would say going forward, I see these forces stabilizing, again, with some difference in the coming quarters. But at some point, with the economy, let me put this hypothesis on the table, with the economy growing and with the capacity that today is available, both in terms of unemployment and industrial capacity that is still below average. I think industrial capacity is 76 compared to 80%+ that we have had in the past. When we close those gaps in the following, I don't know if quarters or year plus, we will probably start to see investments coming back, and then we will see volume coming back again, and probably kind of balancing or stabilizing the difference in between retail and the corporate world.
Next question is from Mario Pierre, Bank of America Merrill Lynch. It seems that the economic recovery this year is losing some momentum. At the same time, your asset quality is improving. How does that change your risk appetite? What kind of loan growth can we expect for the year? How do you describe the competitive environment in Brazil today? And are there any concerns about fintechs becoming more active?
Thank you, Mario. Okay, economic and asset quality, economic environment and asset quality. I mean, I mentioned in my script, I mean, it is clear that the expectations of growth that the market had 3-4 or even 2 quarters ago have been reduced. I mean, what the market was probably thinking in 2+%, 2.5% GDP growth, and today we are more in the 1.5 area, which means that probably volumes compared to what was thought these 3 to 6 months ago will probably be lower. Here you have two things, I would say. No? You have first the reality. I mean, in nominal terms, the GDP will be growing, I don't know, somewhere around 6+%, which means that volumes at the country level could grow above that, but, I mean, still to be seen. Probably what the second point that I was mentioning is the breakdown of that average. And the breakdown of that average is, as public figures show, private banks clearly growing more than public banks losing market share, while private banks gaining market share. We are about to be 50-50 in the market share of both public and private, compared to 57-43 that was just some time ago. And I wouldn't be surprised if those lines cross over with private banks having more market share. So, yes, I mean, volumes are going to be growing probably a little bit less than what everybody expected months or quarters ago. The opportunity for private banks is still there. Does that affect appetite and acid quality? Well, again, I go back to my previous words. I mean, we are confident with our risk models. I mean, as you see, we have been growing strongly in intense risk segments. Let me say like that, like finance, consumption finance. This is already 4 years, so it's throughout the crisis, and it hasn't shown a deterioration in terms of quality. So appetite will remain more or less where it is. Again, remember, we price credit by individually in terms of risk. We have all the models, et cetera, that I mentioned. I'm going to repeat myself. So I don't see a strong argument here to kind of move from being very positive to very negative or something like that. Santander has always, I have always mentioned this, has always been open for business. So we remain as we were 1, 2, or 3 years ago in terms of appetite. And the last part of your question, Mario, was the competitive environment. Well, I mentioned the acquiring part of the business, which is more intense now. I wouldn't be surprised, but it is more intense now. I mentioned the spreads. You have the fintech world. The fintech world is not new. I always have said that the fintech world is an opportunity, both because it's good competition and second because it's good potential partners if we know how to leverage or partner with them. But this is, I mean, if it is not a bank, it's going to be a fintech. If it's not a fintech, it's going to be one of the big communications or social media companies. I mean, competition is going to be here. It's going to be intense. It's going to continue. Good for that. We welcome that. It makes us better. When you do not have a strong competition, you become a little bit less aggressive, let me say like that, or a little bit less worried about what is happening around you. So, I mean, call it again, fintech, banks, we have very good, very strong competition, and we clearly welcome that. I have always shared with you that I also defend full competition, full flexibility in terms of regulatory things. So, I mean, we are happy to see these things happening.
Okay, now we're going to take questions by phone.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1. Mr. Rafael Frade from Bradesco would like to make a question.
Hi, good morning all. My question is related to fees, especially on the credit card fees. Was a very impressive 20% growth year on year. And if I assume that acquiring business probably is growing less than that, it means that the insurance business is growing even stronger than that. So if you could elaborate a little bit on what's happening here. In fact, and in addition to this, when I look for the commercial expenses related to cards that you book on other expenses, it grew 50% year over year. So I would like just to understand a little bit what's going on the credit card business, on the insurance side, what's the strategy here, and how do you see this evolve? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rafael. Well, credit card business. The obvious answer is yes. We have been growing strongly, not this quarter, for some time now. I think I have shared with you our strategies here for some time in both current account and non-current account holders. On the non-current account holders, we were basically, I wouldn't say out of the business, but we were not intense, and we have clearly moved that and changed that during the last couple of years. I mentioned in my speech, this comes from the Apple and the Android store. We have the best credit card app in Santander in Brazil today, the Santander Way. feedback and usage of that app is enormous. So it all leads. We have different very good agreements, like American Airlines, like other white label agreements. So, I mean, it all leads to a position in which we have been able to strengthen. We are selling more than 400,000 credit cards per month. So, I mean, the activity and the evolution is strong, and we think we can keep on with that. Again, with competition, with all what I am mentioning, but I think we are positive in terms of how this can evolve in the future, and specifically because it's a very good opportunity to not only speak of non-current account holders, but to transform them, I don't know if into current account holders or into other products. So the cross-selling opportunity that I also mentioned in one of my slides is also there. And the second part of your question has to do with Esfera, our loyalty area. I mean, I think the investor relations team can give you more detail, but it is a very simple movement in between lines in the P&L. Nothing really to underline, but it's a technical issue that the investor relations will give you the details.
Mr. George Friedman from Citibank would like to make a question.
Thank you very much. Just to try to understand a bit further the dynamics on provisions. Considering that you are part of a Spanish group, I understand that you already incorporate full IFRS to report to the parent. I was comparing the releases of IFRS and BR GAAP and noted that provisions under IFRS imply 17 to 20% higher levels versus the provisions under BR GAAP. Is this already contemplating IFRS 9 by any chance? This question is just for me to understand in case the central bank would evolve for IFRS 9, the potential impacts that banks could have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George. Yeah, you are right. I mean, we do present IFRS 9 in the what we call Spanish criteria, so in the group numbers, and we do not follow in BR GAAP here. Believe me that IFRS 9 is a little bit more complicated than a simple one-minute answer, but I will try to let you understand. As you know, you have three stages in IFRS 9. The more you grow, the more you provision upfront, but it converges with time. Okay, that's basically the main idea I want to say with you. So if you grow a lot, you will have kind of front provisions happening, and that will lead to less provisionings happening in the future. Right? That's basically the main idea and the main difference. We have been working in IFRS 9, as I said, already for 3 years now. I said 2 years, 3 years now. We expect BaFin to implement IFRS 9 in the next, quarters or years. We will welcome that. And we are fully prepared in terms of know-how and knowledge. I mean, this is, we used to, when we started with this, we used to run in parallel for several quarters so that it could be addressed in the right way. So far, this is the situation. When you compare criteria in terms of local and IFRS, etc., taking the net numbers, it's a little bit tricky, okay? Because you do have other impacts, a little bit long to explain here now, but you have other impacts that are not as simple as just making the difference. And that would be my main comment here. I mean, it's a short answer, but the alternative is really long, eh?
Remembering, if you have a question, please press star 1. Mr. Ottavio Tanganelli from Credit Suisse would like to make a question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I have a question regarding the other NII. We saw a very resilient performance of this line, roughly around 2.5 billion this quarter, repeating the performance in previous quarter. How do you expect this to continue going forward? Should we expect the decline of this line going further throughout the year? Thanks.
Thank you, Tavio. Well, I have addressed this in past quarters also. I mean, I anticipated to you that I didn't. I mean, this depends on some volatility, depending on the prop and treasury activities from our investment banking unit that I remember to you. This is separate from the ALM, from the capital remuneration, and from the other revenues that we have in that area that that I have shared with you in the past. But it comes to, I mean, in the region, I mean, if you see the last, I think it's 3-4 quarters, it has been somehow stable because of the offsetting of the different trends. No, it has to do with a structural position that I have already said with you also in the past. We haven't moved that. So, I mean, difficult to estimate. I understand always the concept others kind of rise a kind of a light to some part of the analyst, but for us it's part of the business as I have already argumented in the past. So stability is how we have been showing this in the past, and to be quite honest, I don't see a strong movements. There will be volatility, yes, there will be volatility, because it has some volatility elements within the line, but that's all I can say with this line. Nothing new, although there were some doubts in the past, and nothing new that I can see that is happening now and that will happen in the future.
Thank you. The Q&A section is over, and I wish to hand over to Mr. Angel Santo Domingo for his closing remarks.
I think they are saying to me that we have a last question. Is that right?
Mr. Carlos Gomez from AGSBC would like to make a question.
Hi, thank you very much for taking the last question. Actually, two questions. First, as you mentioned, your dividend is the dividend and interest on capital is higher than in the past. You're paying $1 billion per quarter. Are you giving an indication for what your payout should be this year? And second, a minor thing, you have an increase in goodwill. Is that for the minorities of the net? Thank you.
Last part was minorities of the net. Okay, Carlos, thank you. Get net minorities. On interest on capital, you're right. I mean, remember, in 2017, we moved from paying almost once per year. We paid a small dividend in August and the bulk of it in December to a quarterly payment. That was a move we wanted to make with the market. We started paying 500 million reais per quarter in 2017. That was moved to 600 million per quarter in 2018, and the board has approved 1B this year as the first queue. But theoretically, this is up to the board. I'm not going to anticipate what they will be neither discussing nor, of course, deciding. But theoretically, if we follow patterns from last year's, this should keep on being the same quantity by quarter. Now, payout. Well, we can work around a 50% payout. That would be probably our idea today. Which means if we maintain return on equities where they are and growth of risk-weighted assets of around, I don't know, close to 10%, that gives us an idea of a 50% payout ratio to keep on with the same capital ratios. So around there probably is a good guideline. And minorities of GetNet, I didn't understand exactly the question, but, I mean, they have been bought. We executed the... we announced the 11% acquisition, so we have 100%. I think we are expecting still some small authorization. I'm not sure if it has 100% approved or not, but it's a pure regulatory process. So it's nothing, it's already agreed, and we are there. Okay. Well, I think with that we end up the Q&A session. Thank you for your presence. Thank you for your participation. I am quite... happy to share with you another set of results, another strong set of results and profitability. And I look forward to sharing with you next quarter results in next quarters. Thank you.
Banco Santander Brazil's conference call has come to the end. We thank you for your participation. Have a nice day.